God,
grant me the grant
divinity,
serenity
to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to those in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Hey, Savannah.
Hey, Savannah. Welcome. Thanks. Glad you're here.
Hey, Tavares.
Tavares, welcome.
Welcome. Thanks. Glad you're here. Anyone else? Those on Zoom, raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessarily moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry out that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve a common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are on steps, discussing steps, step one, part two. Please welcome our panel, JT and...
Is that guy's name?
What's that guy's name? Oh, I'm just kidding. Nick. Nick. And cool. I will read the first paragraph on page five. Step one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. Page five. I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. This is my favorite part of the book. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way, and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder. For such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed, and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now what I had what it takes. One day I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time. But I might as well get good and drunk then, and I did.
Thank you, Travis. Hello, everybody. My name's Nick, and I'm an alcoholic.
And Nick.
I want to thank Amy and Simple Actions for inviting me to the opportunity to serve. I want to thank Travis for joining me up here on the panel.
It's Travis.
I want to thank JT. I think... if you would have asked me on my first AA meeting that this was part of the deal, I probably would have walked out. Alcohol, for me, it brought me together. It pulled people close to me. But after a period of time, it started to separate me from everybody, from my fellows, whether I was drinking or whether I wasn't drinking. I knew early on I didn't drink like normal people. I knew early on I couldn't drink safely. And when I was 23, I had an intuitive thought after a long night of drinking that I was going to die from this and something must be stopped. And I ended up going to the hospital and getting some withdrawal medicine, but I ended up quitting cold turkey when I was 23 years old. I realized what the disease was doing to me. And again, fear took in and my willpower took over. I did a lot of things to stay sober. Again, at this point in time, I wasn't working any program. I was running out of willpower. Fear was a big factor for me. You know, alcohol was equated to me. Alcohol was death to me. At that point in my life, I knew I couldn't drink safely, and I didn't have an option. And so, I ended up several ways. I tried to stay sober. I avoided a lot of things. I isolated. I believe this disease wants me alone, and that's where it had me for a long time. But I wasn't drinking. And there came a time after about 10 years, I thought I can drink again like a normal person. And I couldn't tell you anything about that day. I was in Orlando, Florida at the time. I just thought I could drink after 10 years. I thought I had the disease beat. And last week we learned about the allergy of the body when alcohol comes into me. My body reacts differently and I want more. And that experience, is very true to me. Then I went 10 years and I had half a beer. And again, I knew I was signing my life over at that point. And, I had the normal progression as if I just started again, but it was way worse. No fun in my drinking. It was all pretty miserable and depressing. And again, where was my resolve? I thought I could drink like a normal person again. And we'll get more into the last year and a half of me drinking that led me to AA, but I'll go ahead and pass that to JT.
JT alcoholic. Thanks, bud. It's actually really good to have you up here. Our conversations have meant the world to me. And it's good to see you like start to shine here.
Thank you, brother.
So I never just woke up. It was always coming to, because I never drank like a gentleman. It was a party as hard as I could for as long as I could. And then when the money ran out, then the party went on pause. And then when the money came back, the party was just go again. And, you know, moderation was never one of those things that was an ideal for me. Drinking like a gentleman was never on my radar. Like alcohol did, like it was a miracle for me, because before I started drinking, like everything sucked. And then I was small. That's about the best thing I could describe myself as, is that I did not feel significant. And alcohol kind of took all that filter away, and I felt like I could be alive. So the most important thing that I read in here was this had to be stopped. And that's step zero. Because if it doesn't have to stop, then why are you here? Because if you don't have to stop drinking, then being here isn't going to help. It's my experience. Like when I wasn't done, there was nothing that anybody was going to tell me that was going to convince me that I needed to stop drinking, because it still worked. When alcohol stopped working for me the way that I needed it to, that's when things had to change. It wasn't when my family said, "Hey, time to get your shit together, JT." Excuse my language. But it was when I knew that I needed to, and nobody could tell me otherwise, right? So I got this thing we just touched on a little bit, is that like I'm powerless over alcohol. And that looks like when I take a drink, I can't stop. But we're here talking about the unmanageability tonight. And I have a mind that tells me it's time to drink, even when I know it's a bad idea, right? And I don't have a defense. And the couple of the readings were amazing, because like there have been times where I have set out and not wanted to drink and drank. And there have been times where I've set out to have a few, and then I wind up beating on the bar until 3 o'clock in the morning, and then like having to go to bed and wake up and go to court, you know, and like go in front of a judge for a DUI, right? I didn't intend on doing that. I just wanted a few to like take the edge off. And I'm in court the next morning, still hammered. Like, that's not normal. But that's what I did. I had no other choice, because if you felt like the way that I felt, you would want to drink too. And that was just me thinking about me all the time. It wasn't really anything different about life than what anybody else was going through. It's just for some reason, I think that I deserve something different than what everyone else is getting. Like a normal life. Like for some reason, I deserve ease and comfort where everyone else struggles like a normal human being, but I'm different. I deserve things to be smoother. And that's the kind of delusion that I'm under. Like I'm full of self, and I, and if you get in the way of my drinking or my ease and comfort, it's a bad day for you, because just kind of walk over people. And when that no longer works and the alcohol no longer works and death seems like a really good idea because I've tried everything else, this is when Alcoholics Anonymous sounds like a really good idea to a guy like me, because I can't do it alone. So with that, I'll pass.
Thank you both. All right. Our next reading is on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge.
Thank you, Travis. Self-knowledge. I mean, again, in my experience, knowing what I knew, knew when I first quit when I was 23 and what I walked through and what it did to me, you know, that slowly leaves the mind. And again, you slowly think that, you know, you can drink again. Let's see. I mean, again, you saw, I mean, for me, my willpower was tapped out at that point. Once I started drinking, I really had no intentions on stopping. I slowly tried to moderate. But again, once I started drinking, I couldn't stop. And then, you know, my pattern was something really bad would happen. And I quit for a day or two, and then just enough to get the heat off of me. And then I started drinking again. And I think as was shared, I never really went out with the intent on getting drunk. I always started with, you know, my resolve. I'd always start with a 6-pack. Because I know if I get 12, I know where that's going to go. I at least had a shot if I started with 6. But once I started, you know, I couldn't stop. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high, went to town regularly, and even made a little money. Surely that was the answer, self-knowledge. I think that's all I got. I'm drawing a blank.
JT, alcohol still. I figured the first time I got sober was around 2001. And I didn't do your work. And I just kind of hung around meetings here and there. I showed up and I saw people get sober and I just stopped drinking. And I wasn't familiar with untreated alcoholism as a concept. Right. And untreated alcoholism, first of all, we usually just define alcoholism as the utter inability to leave it alone, no matter the wish, will, or desire. Right. And when I'm the guy that's just running my show the way that I want, how I want, that's for here is untreated alcoholism, right? Because we've found that having a power that's greater than ourselves that solves our problem and then participating in this program is a way to treat alcoholism, because this does provide a suitable substitute. Like when I'm focused on you rather than focused on me, like I'm okay when things aren't okay in my life. Right. So self-knowledge, when I didn't do any of the work and I was just willing my life to go the way that I wanted it, and it was falling apart, and I would just smile and I would ignore it, and I would just stuff it down, and I would just try to like ignore and evade, and like people would start to see that it wasn't working in my life. In Alcoholics Anonymous, where I was going, I would stop going to that meeting and I would go over here, and you know, and I was lonely, and I was about 7 years sober at the time, and I was watching people around me recover from alcoholism, and I could not tap into it because I had figured it out. I had been 7 years without taking the steps. So clearly I don't need to do that. Right. And I was surprised when I got drunk. I was surprised when I got drunk. It's about 2009. Things had just completely fallen apart, and I still didn't know what untreated alcoholism was because I had never taken the steps, and I had not gone to a meeting in years at that point. I think it was like 2 years. And then I had not gone to a meeting when I came back here, and I moved back here, and I didn't plug in, and I had a situation where, you know, I was on the phone with my ex-wife to be, and she wanted me to come home. And it was like 4 o'clock in the morning when we finally got off the phone, and I called her up in the morning, and I'm like, I'm ready. And she's like, don't, it was a mistake. And I threw my phone and I blamed her because it's her fault why I drank. Does that make any sense to anybody here? No, but I can justify that. Like when I'm uncomfortable, it's okay for me to drink. And if you don't like arrange your life to make me comfortable, then you suck. But that's to me, that's what I understand is untreated alcoholism. I'm just running the show. So the knowledge that I had gained from being around Alcoholics Anonymous, fear sobered me for a bit. But when the fear was gone, what was left? I that was it. That's all I had. I had fear of getting drunk. When the fear was gone, what was propelling me forward? What was providing me with the sense of belonging? And when I felt apart from you because I wasn't doing what you were doing, I had nowhere to turn. So I got drunk, and I learned afterwards, like when I got back in here and I took the steps, and I was like, wow, I'm surprised I made it that long. Most people do that for about 6 months and they're like, screw this. And either get busy doing Alcoholics Anonymous or they go out and get drunk. So that's what the kind of stuff the self-knowledge does for a guy like me. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you both. Our third reading is on page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this will time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on the hot stove. Nick?
There we go. Have lost the power of choice in drink. I got to that point pretty quick again once I started drinking again. It got to a point where I was just drinking to function. Again, alcohol brought me close to people. It allowed me to allowed me to function in society. I felt like I needed to drink just to go out in the world. That's where my drinking took me. So the memory, I remember drinking I quit for 10 years and I started drinking again. I didn't want to quit again. It was too hard to quit. I thought I was just going to manage it the best I could. And again, in terms for me managing, I realized I couldn't drink socially. The whole time I wanted to be social, but I realized when I'm in a social environment, I absolutely have zero control. So my idea of controlled drinking was isolating. And you know, when you drink like that from time to time, you're going to drink to excess and bad things are going to happen and you're going to make a fool of yourself. And, you know, I remember there was a time I was walking into work and the night before I happened to not drink. And I was just so glad I didn't drink. I was walking into work, not hungover, but you know, knowing that that was an excuse for me to get drunk that night. Cause I didn't drink. We were without the defense against the first drink. For me, I remember my girlfriend at the time, we both worked in hospitality and we had opposite days off. And I'm going to be honest, I purposely made sure our days were off so I can have the day on my own to drink. And she would leave at 10 in the morning. And she said, Nick, please don't drink today. And I looked at her and I told her I wouldn't. And I would really try for, you know, an hour or so. And, you know, oh, if I can just drink these six beers, I'll have plenty of time to sober up before she gets back. But that's how it always started for me. And when you get down to the fourth or fifth beer, you realize you don't have enough beer. And you say, all right, if I hurry up and get this other six, by the time she gets home, I'll be able to sober up. That was how I drank. And it always ended the same way. She'd come home and I'd promise to cook dinner and the house would be a mess. I did have dinner made, but it was miserable. And you know, knowing how I drink, that was the only safe way I thought how to drink was to be by myself. Again, when I go out in public, bad things happen. I think the two times I remember in Florida, I thought the bartender was having sex with my girlfriend when we were out at the bar. And then there was another time at Disney where I almost got arrested. Those are the two times I remember drinking out in public and I couldn't control myself. There's completely fair. There's no, I just don't have, at this point, I have no defense against the first drink. I think that's all I got.
What you were describing sounds like Tuesday to me. And that was my drinking, you know, the idea that I've lost the power of choice in the drink. That's you know, for I have a lot of pride and I'll be like, no, I choose when. But when it's every day and I justify drinking because of good things and bad things, but I've never been arrested because I was stone cold sober. The only times I've been arrested, I've had alcohol in me or drugs of some other kind, you know, and it's a crapshoot. What's going to happen when I take a drink? Some days it's a few beers. And then some days it's, you know, I wake up in another state. And where are my clothes? Where is my car? Right. So I don't know how it's going to end up. It's probably not going to be good. And it was never good for anybody around me. No one has ever come to me after me drinking and been like, you know what? I had a wonderful time hanging out with you last night. I lost a lot of friends who would just stop talking to me after they hung out with me a few times when I got drunk. So, I mean, they're like, you can extrapolate what you want from that. But that, to me, was normal. And the people that I hung out with, that was normal. But I don't know that to be normal anymore. Right? Like, I hear other people's drinking experiences where that happens. And today, it's like, wow, that sucks. I'm like, there I go. That's me. I don't have control over the amount that I take, because once I start taking it, it does something for me, which nothing else on the planet does. No relationship has been ever been able to touch the ease and comfort that comes with alcohol. No amount of money that I've made, no look from family or from a girlfriend or from my ex-wife ever did what alcohol did. I would plan my entire life around it. Like, when am I going to get drunk? How can I get drunk? Or I got to avoid getting drunk because of X, Y, and Z. Like, these are the determining factors in my life. That's my higher power. Like, that was my master, alcohol, because it controlled every aspect of my life. And I tried to say to my delusional self that it was not so, and it was y'all, or if it was my problems, like, oh, if you had your life, if your life was as hard as mine was, you know, you'd drink too. Well, people, I know plenty of people that have had worse lives than me that are perfectly capable of being a decent human being without being told how to do that. And that is impossible for me on my own. So the threadbare idea about how I can just do it without getting hurt. Yeah, I've tried that a few times. And I'm delusional. I think that it's going to be okay this time. And it has never been okay. And there are times, and like, this is the funny thing, is that like, it's not just alcohol. It's relationships for a guy like me. Because I'm not looking for alcohol. I'm looking for ease and comfort. Because I'll get it. I have to have it. It's like oxygen for me. Like, I have to be okay in my own skin. And that's unfortunate for everyone around me. But when I'm connected to Alcoholics Anonymous, God provides that for me where y'all could never do that. And now, and when I'm connected to this business of doing Alcoholics Anonymous, it's not your job to make me feel okay. My job feeling okay is when I'm here to help you. And then make no bones about it. That's something that I will claw and bite and scratch for today, because that's the shit that keeps me alive. Not the feeling better because I've had a bad day. It's how can I be of service? Because that's the only thing that provides long-term contented sobriety for me. That's all I got.
Thanks, JT.
Thank you. All right. Continuing on page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced that to a man alcoholics of our type are in the grip of progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better.
Thank you, Travis. There's a lot in that reading. I think for me, I always thought I was alcoholic. I from the earliest time, I knew I didn't drink like, you know, my peers, but I always thought that this disease was mine to conquer, mine to figure out. In my experience, I try to do it on my own. But it's crucial to, you know, for this program to work for me. And you got to get to a point where you realize you're an alcoholic, and you can't safely drink again. And again, in my experience, I didn't drink for about 10 years, And again, in my mind, I thought I had it beat. I thought the long period of separation from alcohol was gone. I thought it was safe to drink again. And man, that to me, that was the most powerful thing for me. That's what convinced me. Again, I think everybody is different, but that convinced me, no matter how long I don't drink, it's going to be there. And the reading says it progressively gets worse. I think even without drinking, it gets worse. Again, in my experience, you know, each time you quit and you pick up again, it's harder to stop. And when I started drinking again, I had no intention on quitting. I was just going to make this as comfortable as possible, you know, to the very end, wherever that was going to go. I was in it to win it. I was going to make it work. But I believe, you know, the consequence, I mean, when you drink to excess, you know, not again, not every day, but when you drink to excess, you know, bad things are going to start to happen. I was living a lie on all fronts, at work, personal life. And to fuel that for me was just to keep on drinking. I can think back on my last week of drinking that led me here. Again, I had really no safe direction, and I hunkered down in a hotel and no one knew where I was. I just barricaded myself in there, and I had my number one friend, alcohol. And I felt, as sick as that sounds, I thought I was okay. As long as I had alcohol, I'd be able to figure something out. And, you know, we'll take it to the gates of, or I would take it to the gates of insanity. You know, I really, again, it was too hard to quit on my own. I did not want to do it. But I believe, you know, my experiences of quitting twice, I believe it was an intuitive thought, a thought that's not my own, where I really thought, like, I played all my cards. I need help. Let's see. We never gain control. I mean, I think that was something I always tried. Again, I when I picked back up after 10 years, I wanted to regain control. I wanted to prove to people I can drink again, and I want to prove to myself. But again, it just doesn't work. I'm not like normal people. I am an alcoholic, and I will never recover control of my drinking. And so what do I have? I have these steps that'll teach me on a new way to live. Without alcohol, I'll pass.
Thanks, Nick.
So the biggest thing that I can say about my alcoholism is that my brain tells me that I'm not an alcoholic, and that this is normal. It's fine. Just set it aside. You know, my need for ease and comfort will come with whatever it is that I do. Alcohol just seems to work when everything else fails, right? So I think that I deserve ease and comfort. Like, things should just work out for me. And here's the inconsistency. It's like, I'll put in 50% and want 100 back. I'm terrified of being alone, but I'm horrible to be in a relationship with. You know, I am terrified that you think that I'm an idiot. And then I open my mouth and then you figure it out whether you like that or not. Like, so I want to sound good. You know, so I've got some weird things that are going on in my life, and like, and these are normal things for me, but they may not be normal. Right. Like, the alcoholic life seems normal to every alcoholic that's in it. Like, it's how I grew up. This is the way it was. Right. How do I concede to my innermost self that I'm a chronic alcoholic? it helps to understand that in our book, we talk about the difference between a casual or a moderate drinker, a heavy drinker, and an alcoholic. If I'm not aware of what those things are, it's hard to know what we're specifically talking about. Like a moderate drinker, take it or leave it. That's it. No problems. Unless there is a problem, maybe one or two. And then it's like, oh, I'm good. And they can turn it off or dial it down, and they can moderate like with ease. And they don't have the kind of problems that come with a guy like me. A heavy drinker may need to go to detox. May need to show up here to hear, hey, man, this isn't going to get better. And then they're like, right on. I'm just going to stop or moderate. And they do that on their own. And my hat's off. If that's you, great. That's not me. I heard what you had to say, tried to figure it out on my own, and failed miserably again and again until I showed back up and I just said, Uncle, I'm done fighting. Show me what you do. Because I can't do me anymore and be successful. I'm tired and I don't want to fight anymore. That's when what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous became easy to do. When I'm fighting and I've got stuff figured out, I'm an unbearable person to be around. And I won't follow directions because I'll figure it out better myself. Right? I don't know if that's been y'all's experience, but that's what I can bring to the table. You know, how we never regain control. Well, for me to understand, like, the big problem that I have is to control my drinking or enjoy my drinking. And those are the two things that I try to do. And I've never been able to control the amount that I take and enjoy it at the same time. When I'm enjoying the alcohol that I consume, nobody's having fun but me. And then if I'm controlling the amount that I take, I am very uncomfortable in my own skin, because if I get a little bit, I need to finish the job. Like, I really need to finish the job. I can't just get half-cocked. Like, it needs to be full on, because when I start to drink, I need oblivion. I need to just check out. Because when I start to drink, that's when all the things come out where, oh, you're really horrible, or you're really this, or you're really that. And I can't handle that chatter upstairs. So I want oblivion. I wanted oblivion when there was no alcohol in there. And I'm thinking about me, thinking about you, thinking about me, about how you think I'm an awesome person, or you think I'm a bad person, and I don't know how to handle it. And I got to figure out all this stuff in my mind. It's like 1,000 miles an hour. And I just want it to stop. And alcohol sometimes takes care of that problem. Right. So it's like, this business of control is something that I've never had. I strive for it. I get upset when I don't get it, but I try to manage things. And that's the best I can do, is control. It's just manage. Just try to get people to work the board like it's chess, so that I can do well. And that's the hard part, is I think I'm slick when I do that, but nobody is on board with that game of chess, because everybody knows how to play that game of chess, because everybody's playing that game of chess themselves. Everybody knows how to try to move pieces on the board to get what they want. That's nothing new. The delusion I'm under is that I think I'm special and that I'm different, and that's okay for me to do. And it's not. So this business of recovering control is never going to work for a guy like me, because I'm not anything different than anybody else. Nobody gets away with this over any considerable period of time. Everybody takes for themselves when they see others take from the pot. I've seen it 100% of the time. And so that I'm convinced to a man that this is a progressive illness. The fact that I still suffer from the need for ease and comfort as a normal human being is never going away. The problem is that I have chronic alcoholism. If I don't get the ease and comfort, I will drink again. And for me to drink is die, because I can't turn the switch off once it's started. So as I've gotten older, normal life has happened to me just like everybody else, and I've had to learn how to cope with that as a normal human being with alcoholism. and I've needed tools to do that. So I've needed to learn how to do this better as I've gotten older in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've failed miserably more than I've succeeded, but God has saw fit that I stay sober, which is a testament to the fact that this really works. I shouldn't be sober. I'm not always a nice guy, but if being nice was a prerequisite to getting sober, none of us would have been able to get sober. We all just had to get beat up bad enough to say uncle and then start over, because that is the only way I stay sober. Good graces, I'm not a saint. I know how to ask for help when I'm desperate. And if you're desperate and you're new, welcome, because this is the greatest show on earth. That's all I got.
Thank you, Ben. All right, continuing on page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesized that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come. I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more. For what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I know from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow.
Thank you, Travis. Yeah. This line here. I now remember what my alcoholic friends had told me. Now they prophesized that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. Again, in my experience, I will drink again if I'm not working a program. I tapped out on willpower. The time or place, you know, good or bad, it'll happen again. And again, that's what got me drinking again over 2.5 years ago. He said that I did raise a defense. I would one day give way more. I mean, reason for drink. I really, near the end, I didn't really have a reason to drink. I was just drinking to, again, a lot of times just to sleep. It was just like a battery. I just needed a drink so I could function. I got to a point where I think it was shared. I just wanted to control my drinking so I can get to work. That was like the fine line of moderate, you know, controlling my drinking so I can get to work. They said, I get to raise it. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I mean, in my experience, if I had a desire to drink, you know, I was going to drink. Before AA, I had no defense against the first drink. Now I have a fellowship of friends I can call. I have a higher power I can pray to. But I remember before I got to AA, there was a time where I was going into the store to get alcohol, and it was almost 2 o'clock. And I remember the lady in front of me, she was, for some weird reason, she was exchanging foot lotion at 2 in the morning. And I was so irritated out of my mind. Again, I had this decision in my head that I was going to drink and like nothing was going to stop me. And again, this lady's taking, you know, 10 minutes to return foot lotion at 2 a.m. And I'm like, I'm sitting there with my beer. Anyway, it was an angel because CVS, they have like a cutoff. So they're like, we cannot ring it in. So I couldn't ring it in. And then I remember the stranger said, I have that beer at my house. Would you like to come over? I paused and thought about it, dude.
Seems legit.
I paused and thought, I mean, that's where my drinking took me. I was willing to either steal it or go to a stranger's house. I had that beer at my house. Like, no. But I paused and thought about it. But the point is, when I get this thought in my head, I'll go to the ends of the world. If I have my mind made up in my head, this is before AA. If I have my mind made up that I'm going to drink, there's nothing that can stop me. Nothing. Mm. And this left me hopelessly defeated. I mean, really, again, I didn't want to quit drinking. I would have kept going. I really thought I could have kept going. But my body, my mind was already gone. I already didn't enjoy drinking. There was a point where I didn't enjoy drinking anymore. But the last thing that went was my body, I think. And again, I had intuitive thoughts for me to stop. And like JT mentioned, to ask for help, to finally, lay the sword down. I can't do it anymore. And there's a lot of things that happened to get me here. And I'm extremely grateful for those troubles, because those really, some of those saved my life and that got me here. It was a crushing blow. That's what this does to me. And I had one last blow. And again, I asked for help, like JT said, and I came to see you guys. So that's all I got.
So from 2009, when I fell off the wagon, after being sober for a while, it took about 3 months before it was over, right? It was drinking every day as much as I could, consuming as many drugs as I could get my hands on. And I thought that it was like I had it managed, right? Because I could keep a job. My job would steadily get like lower in like responsibility. I'd go from like working in fine dining restaurants and then wind up at like dive bars. But the idea that when I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots, I knew it was never safe or a really good idea for me to drink. Because I have evidence of DUIs and arrests and disappointment in my family's faces and high school dropout, kicked out of the Navy, right? So this is what I'm bringing to the table. And then after I get off the phone with my ex-wife-to-be, it's now acceptable for me to take a drink. Like, it wasn't that morning. I didn't wake up that day and be like, I think today's the day I'm just going to have a few. Right? I didn't wake up that day and think that's what was going to happen. I thought I was going to be going home when I woke up that day. And when it didn't work out the way that I wanted, the need for ease and comfort was more powerful than any amount of reason that anybody could provide, including my own history. And that's one thing that we talked about here in the little reading, is that I can't recall with sufficient force the problems of yesterday and beyond, sometimes I can't see the problems of now. And now I just need easy comfort. And that's the kind of predicament that's, for me, is the mind of a chronic alcoholic. You know, and then there's this business of selfishness. Like, I'm consumed with self. I'm the only thing I think about. I run everything by me. And because sometimes, you know, you need professional opinion, right? Just when you talk to yourself. Duh. Right. So I got these mental blank spots because I'm blocked. Like, I've got all this calamity in my life and it's blocking me from seeing the true from the false. Like, I can't get a good view of the big picture because I'm too burnt up with the crap that's going on right now. And it's on fire and I need to deal with it and I need to fix it. I need to work it over and fix it and just, and it gets worse. I don't know if that's normal to y'all, but like when I work on something, I usually want it to get better. But when I work on things and it gets worse, that means it's beyond my power to fix. And I should probably leave it alone, which I'm not really good at figuring that shit out until it's too late. But the problem had me defeated. And it was the fact that I wanted to run my life the way that I wanted. And I wanted to drink the way that I wanted. And it was failing and I was dying. And I had been here before. So when I came back, I asked for help. I didn't want to do me anymore. We talk about the first step. I can't talk about the first step without talking about step two and step three, because these things all happen at the same time. The first step is an idea. I'm screwed because I have a mind that's going to tell me it's time to drink and I have a body that won't let me quit. Step two, you say that Alcoholics Anonymous will solve my problem. And step three, I'm desperate enough that I'll try. That's basically it. Like the first two steps are ideas. The third one is an idea followed by an action. I'm willing. I'm so bad that I'm willing to take your suggestion. Because right now, all we're talking about is this. Do you have this idea? Do you have this feeling? Do you have this notion that when you start, you can't stop? Welcome if you do. Because that's the mental blank spot that gets sometimes get glossed over. I don't know. But the fact is that when I think it's a bad idea and I do it anyway, or when I don't want to do it and I do it anyway, you know, it doesn't even need to be alcohol that I do. It could be the next wrong thing that I have no power over doing. And now I need ease and comfort from it. And I take a drink to recover from that. And then I get on the endless continuum of suck where I feel bad. So I drink and then I feel bad because I drink and I need to feel better because I drank. So what do? I drink more. And it's like a roller coaster that never lets me off. So this is the defense that we've been talking about. Like, I'm powerless because if I leave me in charge of my life, this is the way it's going to go. I've had enough experience and proof to see that it doesn't get better if I'm the captain of my own ship. Am I suggesting that you need to put another human being in charge of your life? No. If you ask an alcoholic for help, they might show you how they took the steps so that they could develop, you can develop a power, a relationship with a power that's greater than you. But that's something that I have a way through the mental blank spots. When I do come to and I realize I've made a mistake, instead of it being because I'm drunk, it's because I've just made an ass of myself. But Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a way to walk through that so that I don't have to just pick up the drink because I'm that uncomfortable. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. We're going to thank the panel for coming out tonight.
I mean, get to this one.
You guys did great. We're going to pass the seven tradition basket in accordance with seven tradition. States every AA group ought to be very self-supporting, depending on their contributions. So contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses. The seven tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute in fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Announcements, are there any AA-related announcements?
Hi, Heather.
Hi, Heather.
Hi, thank you all for sharing the panel up there. That is Friday, the 24th flyer. I have Love and Service on August 9th through the 11th. It's round-the-clock meetings with karaoke, live music, and speakers. And they have a young person and Al-Anon. It's the hotel is Hotel Inn in Tanglewood is hosting. That's what you're saying. At $98 a night, the registration for the Love and Service itself is $39. It looks like one of those, like the conference ones we registered before. I got another one with the IAAMC Unity We program. The 35th International AA Men's Conference in Charlotte, North Carolina is April 19th to the 21st. I have a copy of that. Doesn't have any numbers on there, so it's probably on our website. And the AA Women's Meeting is having an anniversary Saturday, April 27th at 3 p.m. Like, that looks like speakers at the Easy Does and Service Center on Harmony Road. But it says the 14th anniversary. And I have a copy of that later, so if you're interested. That's all I got for this round. So
thank you.
Thanks, Karen.
Yep. Hey everybody, I'm Joe, an alcoholic.
Joe. Sure.
This Saturday, the 13th of April at 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at Beach Garden Park in Virginia Beach, CIRCUPAL, which is a Southeastern Regional Conference by Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous, is hosting a cookout and potluck. It's going to be a kickball tournament followed by a red ball meeting. That's 2 p.m. this Saturday, the 13th at Beach Garden Park. Come see me after the meeting for more information. Thanks.
Thanks, Joe. Anyone else?
Hi, I'm Linda.
Hi, Linda.
My home group, Joys of Recovery, is having its anniversary dinner on Thursday, April 8th. We will provide.
Who's that? I think it's Amy.
Speaker is Amy.
Oh, yeah. If you want to hear Jamie, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Woo-hoo.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Amy?
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy.
Amy.
Tomorrow night is the Tidewater Intergroup monthly meeting. Oh. You do not have... Did somebody moan?
It's okay.
I'm sure that was ecstatic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Meeting is at 7:30. It never lasts more than an hour. You do not have to be an intergroup rep to come. It's a great place to find service opportunities. There will be reports from each of the committees, and all of the committees need volunteers to do things that are a delightful part of this way of life that we get to live. So tomorrow night, Easy Does at 7:30 p.m.
Thanks for the reminder. That's the only reason.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you. Anyone else? Cool. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands.
Woo.
Point out the literature. It's over there to my left, your right. If it folds, it's free. Did I forget something? Okay. Just making sure. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me, or if you're shy, please send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. the meeting after the meeting. There may be some fellowship there at Cafe Stella off Colonial Avenue. Feel free to come out and have some fellowship. Thank you. And in closing, let's thank the panel one more time. We will close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. But first, I've asked no one to read the last two paragraphs of 164.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Woo!
All right.
Carter.
And by the way, everyone come up and say thank you to their panel. Thanks.
Yeah.
Take up their time. I'm just kidding. Famous and announced progress. Our Father,
our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is now. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Stay.
Stay.